In 1919, he hit 29 home runs and was sold to the New York Yankees.
A three-run home run for Buffington. The Yankees now lead it by a score of 3-2.
Bill Lee is now going over to a couple of the Yankees, and there they go again.
Swan hits it to deep left. That might send the Yankees to the World Series.
Varitek and A-Rod going at it. Roberts is going. Posada's throw. Roberts, safe.
What can I say? Just dip my heart and call the Yankees my daddies.
Welcome to Fanbase, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports, episode 127. Now, the thing about John Senecals, the co-host here, is that you don't, I've known him, what is it? I started at NBC Connecticut in 2002.
Like 21 years.
Yeah, so, and you've progressively, most people get grumpier when they get older.
Yeah.
But you've gotten less grumpy.
I have?
Yeah, you're like way more positive than you used to be. But we just talking off mic. I mean, you're talking about people who, because I do it too. You'd be mad at me, people at the light who start texting their friends and then they miss
the
light.
No, it's not just texting. It's literally like they're doing their taxes. That's what I say. And my wife gets a kick out of that because they pull up to a traffic light and it's like, all right, I got my whatever. To them, it's 5 minutes. But they never look back up. And it's like, I'm always that guy, the fourth car back that gets stuck at the light.
What the heck?
Yeah.
It's funny. I'll just say this before we move on to baseball, that I was at, there's a light. I picked my kids up at the school in West Hartford, Connecticut, and there's a left turn to go where I need to go. And it's literally like a 5 second light. Like if you're not on point, that first guy's not on point,
right,
you're screwed.
And you can't even drag three cars through the red after that.
Right. I mean, because you got to, I mean, I've done a few risky moves in that. And I was coming to pick him up and some dude was at the front.
Yeah.
He missed the whole light.
Yeah.
And there were cars behind him. And I was like, oh my God, I'd be so furious.
I just don't get it. You know, it's like everyone talks about texting and driving, right? Yeah, it's not a good thing. But like if you know how to drive to begin with and you don't have your head in the proverbial you know what, you can pull it off. All right? You don't need to be in bumper to bumper traffic.
We're
going
not advocating
50 miles
texting
an hour,
or driving.
But John put would down rather, the phones, people.
John would rather have you text and drive than text at a red light. That's your thing.
Hey, at least you're moving. Okay, at least you're moving.
Let's talk baseball.
You've got to be under 21, though.
We got three things up for bid today. You know, we'll talk Yankees and Red Sox seemingly going in different directions. We have is it Jason Dominguez? What's his name?
Jason with two S's.
Yeah, Jason Dominguez. And then Tristan Casas phenomenon in Boston.
Two S's in Casas.
Is it really? So there's a double S kind
no,
of deal?
No, there's just two S's, an S, an A, and an S.
Oh, okay. This does make you an ass. And then we'll talk about my trip to California to Dodger Stadium. I don't know what it is about the Yankees. I mean, Matt Sroyser produces this podcast in our morning show on WTIC 1080 here in Connecticut. I mean, he's like keeps saying every day that the Yankees have a chance. Now, I don't think they have a chance, but there's something about the last week and a half that feels different.
Yeah, it's, you know, that's what I love about baseball. It's unlike, I mean, there are other sports that have a lot of games, but baseball is the one sport where you can really swing the balance within a matter of like five games. You can really swing the balance, and that's what the Yankees have done. When you were off gallivanting on the West Coast last week and we did the podcast, they were 10.5 back.
Yep.
And now they're 6.5 back, game and a half behind the Sox as we speak today. So, yes, there is momentum going forward, and there's reason to be excited. And you should be excited until, as Yogi would say, it ain't over until it's over. Until you're statistically eliminated from the playoffs, you still have a chance, right? And the way they're going and then the way the season lines up with their schedule, there is a very good chance that they could actually do it as long as they keep playing good.
Do you actually think they could get the wild card? Really?
Well, listen, if you're 6.5 back with like 20... three games to play, something like that, it's possible. And the teams you got in front of you, you're playing a lot. You're playing like six games against the Blue Jays. You got four against the Sox. Yeah. You got some games against the Orioles. And then you're finishing against the Royals, who are in the basement. And you got games against Pittsburgh. So, yes, you do need teams ahead of you, obviously, to lose. But that's been happening. And as long as you keep winning, good things will happen. I think it's possible. Listen, there's reason to be excited because they are winning, right? If they hadn't have gotten so beat up in the middle of the season, things might be different, right?
Well, let me ask, though, and what I would say is I still think the most compelling thing is this race for the bottom. Like, I don't think the Yankees will make it. I think it is really fascinating that they're playing that well. I think that it's going to be really important for the Yankees to finish in front of the Red Sox, and I think it's going to be really important for the Red Sox to finish in front of the Yankees. And so you have two really mediocre teams in that four-game set in September all of a sudden is important, which I find fascinating. That's
right.
One. Number two, though, I don't want to get too much into Dominguez now because I want to save that for the Dominguez, because we still haven't talked about the Red Sox, Dominguez Casas, but when we talk about the Yankees in this last week and a half, is it just because they threw out expectations, they have no expectations anymore, and they just put the young kids in? Is that really all that it is?
Well, I think that's part of it. I do believe that obviously a change in scenery helps. You know, as much as you say, you know, Harrison Bader was a local guy and, you know, he wanted to be a Yankee, you always wonder in the back of your head, was there something with him that just wasn't clicking with the
really?
Team? I don't know. It's just why. I mean, he's obviously not coming back next year, right?
Yep.
Like, the future is not with Harrison Bader because they
was
got
rid
of him.
Was he not allowed to show his personality enough?
I just don't know. I think he's not coming back because he's more injury prone than anything, but you always got to wonder why you get rid of someone like that. Now, you know, Donaldson, we've been saying that all along, was a bad pick, but he wasn't around the team. They finally released him. So maybe that was a little bit of refreshment to just know that he's not coming back to the team. But I just think it's more of just a change of scenery, and the expectations were gone. Like, everyone had written the Yankees off, and they were just like, all right, let's go out and play baseball. Maybe everyone got looser. You know, everyone, it's just baseball is all mental.
Yeah.
It's just,
well, it's not all mental,
it's,
but
it's very,
you can have all the talent in the world and be terrible if you don't have the mental side.
Exactly. Yeah. It's obviously a lot of skill, but the mental part of baseball can really drag you down. So when you change the mental attitude of the team and you're just like, let's go out and play baseball, good things will happen.
I think that's it. I think that the elimination of expectations and the infusion of some youth, and, you know, on the flip side with the Red Sox, they've actually had a couple of heartbreaking losses, and they don't have pitching, right? I mean, they don't have starting pitching. And
that's the big difference between the Yankees and the Red Sox. The Yankees actually have some pretty decent pitching going right now.
Right.
They've had good pitching all year, but it's just been from Cole, basically.
Right. And I think that as much as I'm negative on the Red Sox all year, if they had average pitching, they probably would be like right there with the wild card. And they can't lose that many more heartbreaking games without, like, there was a point where I thought they had given up, and then they give a couple days of great effort and don't always come out on top. But I think, to me, like, the even though Alex Cora has mentioned this we're still in it type crap, sounds like Aaron Boone from a month ago, it's over, and you got to finish in front of the Yankees, and that's it.
And so this is like a bragging rights kind of thing?
I actually think it's important, and I don't know why, and I've had no one else talk about it. This is just my own thought. I just feel like if you could be the team that makes New York finish in last, in some ways, as long as you have 82 or more wins, you're successful. And I know it's pathetic to think like that, but that's how I feel right now. Now, I want to transition, because we don't have a ton of time. The reason why we're such a good podcast is that we don't go for 45 minutes. This Dominguez thing, like, you were talking about the Martian like a year ago, right? And he's played, he now has a couple of home runs. He's hit a home run in Yankee Stadium. He's a baby. He can't even drink legally. And I'm just curious if you, my real question is, as much as you knew he was a prospect, are you surprised?
No, I'm not really surprised, because if you look at the transition he's had, if you know, drafted in 2019, is basically, you know, about to turn 17. He doesn't even play hardly at all in 2019, a little bit of Florida League stuff. But then 2020 comes, he doesn't play at all.
Right.
Right. So he basically, all his minor league games have been in 21 and 22. In 21, he was started off in Florida, and I saw him there, and then he went up to Hudson Valley. And then this year he starts in AA. And he basically has, you know, three quarters of the season there, goes up and has nine games in AAA and rakes. I mean, I think the pedigree is there, because when you look at the, it's not surprising. When you look at the across the league, players that make the league when they're 20 years old are usually studs.
Right.
They're usually studs. And then you take a guy who made it without even playing an extra year in the minors, and getting that extra reps is even more impressive. And that's not just Jason Dominguez. That goes for the, you know, the Julio Rodriguez, the Jordan Lawlers, all these guys that are coming up, the Corbin Carrolls.
Was Dominguez a high pick? Was he in the first round?
Well, no. He was an international signing pick. So okay. The Yankees, they switched, I forget, maybe 10 years back how it works. You can't just go out and sign everybody. You get pool money. And I think it was like $5.5 million at the time. And the Yankees spent $5.1 on him, basically all the pool money they had, you know, because this guy was the freak of nature. He was, you know, everything pointed that he was going to be the next best thing since sliced bread. So they took a big gamble on him, signing him with the international signing bonus. But at the same time, it wasn't like they were losing a draft pick on him. So
it's
more of just like they're betting their money on a player than betting, you know, their money and a draft pick on a player. So, you know, I think if he was a U.S. player and he was in the United States, I believe he would have been drafted out of high school because he's that good.
And he's not that big.
No, he's tiny. He's like 5'8" or 5'9", I think. 5'9" or 5'10".
How does he do it?
He's just got great. Everybody talks about the way he controls the bat in the
zone. Is he like a Mookie? Is that the kind of guy he's going to
be? Well, you know, he's quick. He's a switch hitter. They say he's basically a five to a player. He's not going to steal 80 bases for you, but he had 40 stolen bases in the minor leagues this year. So that's pretty good. And, you know, again, when you're a switch hitter, it's like being a left-handed pitcher, right? You're going to stick.
Right.
You know, Aaron Hicks is still playing. so, you know, you are. That's a huge
plus. I didn't know
anything
about him, and you call him the Martian all the time. I thought he was some monster, like a huge monster.
You look at him next to Aaron Judge, it's like he comes up to Judge's chest.
I mean, I think Volpe might be bigger.
Might be.
It's really, so it's fascinating. So he's
5'9", 190.
Wow.
Yeah. Dominican Republic.
So he's their center fielder for the next decade.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, you know, I wish I had mentioned this on the last podcast, is I think he would have been the center fielder coming out of spring training, to be honest with you, if it wasn't for Aaron Hicks. Because Harrison Bader was hurt. He was absolutely tearing up spring training. Dominguez.
You hate Aaron Hicks.
Well, he was batting like .450 in spring training, and then they sent him down because...
So why did it take so long to bring him up?
Well, I think it's just because the situation they were in. They didn't really have a spot for him.
They weren't trying to suppress service time or anything like that.
No. I think that service time crap is... It might work for some teams that don't want to spend money, but for the Yankees, I don't really think it matters.
So you got Dominguez who's up, and he's had a couple of big games. He's batting over 300. His OPS over 1,000.
Hitting every game so far.
I mean, we'll see how it sustains itself. He's got to get tired at some point. I mean, he's played a lot of baseball, which transitions me to Tristan Casas, because, you know, my dad used to call me on a daily basis in April telling me that this guy's the worst player the Red Sox have ever had, right? I mean, that he is pathetic.
He did not start off good.
No, I mean, if you look at the splits, it's really quite amazing when you think about where he's come from. And the truth is, and my dad is a classic New Englander. He's super, super cynical about a bunch of different things. But when you go by the month, I mean, in March, in April, he hit .137. And then every month since, it's been insane. Like, I mean, he hit like .267 in May, but he hit .137 the first month of the season. And it was awful. And now to hit .137 coming out of the gates and be at .268. It's pretty insane. And if you look at his months.
He's got a shot at 30 home runs, too. Well, won't do it, but he'll be.
You said he's going to get votes for Rookie of the Year.
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, the front runner out of the gates for the Rookie of the Year was probably Yoshida, right? Him and Gunnar Henderson.
Henderson. Yoshida's kind of like cheating.
But Yoshida has slid a little bit.
And he's older, too.
He's
right?
Dropped. So, you know, the talk right now is, can Tristan Casas steal the Rookie of the Year from Gunnar Henderson? And I don't even think it's so much of a steal when you look at the numbers.
Well, listen, we got to back-to-back it, but, I mean, this is a guy in the dog days of summer for a young kid who probably runs out of gas. He bat .348 in July. I mean, he slipped a little in August, batting .294, and he's on a tear already in September, even though it's a short stretch. And, you know, overall, I mean, what has he got? He's got 23 home runs, and what does Gunnar have?
23. So Casas is .268, 23, 60 RBIs, 108 hits right now. And Gunner's .251, 23 home runs, 70 RBIs, and 117 hits. And that's just looking at the basics. We're not looking at OPS and WRC plus and all that crap. Those are just like the basics. And when I look at the basics, I say that's a pretty darn close race, right? You know, you got to look into who's walking and who's striking out and all that on base percentage. But the sexy pick, obviously, is Gunnar Henderson because the team's in first place. They'll say he's a difference maker.
What qualifies? What not? Because, I mean, he had 116 at-bats in 2022. What is
I think you need 300 at-bats, something like that. Unless you're Wander Franco. You can just play a month. Well, it's what he did. Like, wasn't he like a rookie year candidate? He had like 250 at-bats or something like that. Something crazy.
Yeah. I mean, anyway, the point is that my dad's not making that phone call anymore.
He's eating crow.
I go back to, this is why I love, I think about elite athletes and baseball, because I remember, I've told the story on the podcast, that, you know, I was at NBC Connecticut, and Jason Hendry was our director, and Pedroia got called up, and he sucked. And I was like, this guy, get him out of there. He's short. He's terrible. And Hendu, who was a high school baseball coach at the time, he's like, just wait. And I was like, whatever. And he was right. And the thing is, but I also like, you know, and I dated Rico Bronya's sister for a number of years, and I went to a lot of games. And I remember talking to him about it. You go 0-4 2 days in a row, and you feel like the weight of the world is on your shoulders, and that you're never going to get a hit ever again.
Yeah.
Like, it's weird how it swings on both. You talk about the number of games, how there's some, it can change momentum and this and that, but the truth is, like, it can be, come an overwhelming pressure cooker going up to the plate and not getting hits. And so I'm amazed when talent finds a way. Like in Jaron Duran, he's got some mental health issues, I guess, but he seemed to have figured it out too. And it's why, you know, like your son, I'm just going on a bit of a rant here, and I wish my son would still play it, is that it's one of the few things in life in this modern society where you have to deal with failure, and you have to, and the good ones figure out how to overcome failure.
Yeah.
And there's very few things in our world now, especially with our children, where that's the case. And you see someone like Casas or whatever, who absolutely hit a wall where he was embarrassing himself at the plate, mm-hmm. and now he looks like he'll be an all-star.
Yeah, and the thing is, you know, when you look across what he did in the first month of the season, you know, you would say, oh, this guy sucks, he's going to go down, but he adjusted, you know,
but not everyone can make that
right,
adjustment.
Right, and that's what I'm going to say. Like, that's the question with Dominguez. You know, everyone's going to wonder, is he going to stay hot? Are the pitchers in the league going to adjust to him, and can he figure it out?
Well, now, they will.
They will, and they do it to everyone, but I think what will help him is he's a switch hitter. That will help him on the back end. But he's just got, from everybody said, he's just got great plate discipline. He doesn't chase a lot of balls. He hasn't looked over anxious, and he always looks very calm. He looks like it's a joke to him. People are always like, why is he smiling? I'm like, well, he's a high school kid.
Yeah, he's so young.
Yeah. Maybe he's probably sitting young here like, I can't believe this is happening to me.
Right.
You know, like obviously it's a dream come true, right? Like, his dad was a huge Yankees fan. He named him after Jason Giambi. His dad's a former like amateur player in the Dominican Republic, but he grew up obviously loving the Yankees, so this has got to be like Derek Jeter kind of stuff for him.
Right, but he's so young that maybe he just doesn't feel the weight of the moment. I don't know, but he clearly is dealing with it quite well. He's John Senecal. I'm Brian Shackman. This is Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports, I believe episode 127. The other thing I wanted to touch on was I took my daughter to look at some schools in California, and we had one night free Friday night, and it was either Beyonce or the Dodgers.
Oh man.
And she wanted,
what was the difference in ticket prices?
Well, to be honest, like my whole thing is like, I could have gotten into Dodger Stadium for like $60 at the top or whatever, but like I have this, and again, I'm not good financially. I'll just tell you, like, I'm not a good, like, personal finance, like, I should have way more money. But I was like, if I'm going to go, I want to go.
Well, that's the thing.
Right.
If you're going across the country, do it right.
So,
don't sit in the nosebleeds.
So I spent like $105 or $110 each for the baseball. And we weren't in the lower part, but when the next one up.
Was that before or after all the fees?
I think with the fees, it ended up being like
$385
each. But Beyonce, we could have gotten into the SoFi Stadium for like $160 each.
SoFi, isn't that San Francisco?
No. SoFi is in LA.
Is it? Okay.
But they have seven decks. I mean, it's like a spaceship. And so,
oh, is that where the Chargers play?
Yeah. And so I decided to go to baseball, and she didn't clamor for it too much. But what I would say is, there's a couple things. One is, guess how much my beer was?
One beer.
One 20-ounce can.
20-ounce can, $17.
$20.
You got to be kidding me. That's more expensive than Yankee Stadium.
I complain about Fenway at $13.
Yeah.
$20.
So $20 for a 20-ounce
can. You could get one for $16.50. There was one available.
All right, so if you say $16.50, and that's what? What kind of beer are we talking?
It's some
local beer.
Yeah, but it was like a lager. It was like a craft Budweiser.
So it's like a $5 at the store, $6 tops. If you go to the store,
no, you could buy a 4-pack at the store probably for $10. So it's like a $3 beer.
Unbelievable.
And so and the thing is that I think it might have been my brother-in-law was like, well, they do it because they're trying to discourage, you know, drinking.
No,
I was like,
they
everyone's still buying it.
They're doing it because they know they can make money off of it.
It's nuts.
Has nothing to do with discouraging drinking.
So there were 52,000 people there. It was against the Braves, and the Braves just, they're good. And they can, and we talked about this offline on text with Master Royce, our producer. Everybody can hit home runs.
120 more home runs than the next team in MLB.
Yeah, let's put a pin in that. That's insane.
That's crazy. Now that number might be a little bit off. It might be up
depending on the day we're at right now.
Yeah, but to think that they have hit 120 more
as a team
than any other team.
And there's never the biggest disparity is since when?
Since the New York Yankees in 1927, I think they had like 110 more. And they have 253-plus run differential.
It's incredible. And you could see the difference in the team. And so, like, by the way, if you have any stat today, that's incredible. It's around 120 more home runs than any other team in baseball. And,
like, if that team gets into the playoffs and actually craps the bed and just goes cold, like, what a disappointment. They should throttle through the playoffs.
And this is what I said to my friend. My friend is a big – he grew up in Atlanta, and we were texting, and I said, they got to win. And he said, well, we won last year. I said, no. I said, you're sitting on a dynasty. Like, you should be winning multiple titles.
They didn't win last year.
What did they win? 2 years
Astros,
ago?
Yeah. There hasn't been a back-to-back World Series winner since the Yankees. Yeah.
So his point was, like, we got our title. And my point is that
you want more.
Well, you look at the 90s, they only had one title, and that's looked at as a failure.
Right.
And so but back to Dodger Stadium. Like, I've only been to the new Yankee Stadium once, the old Yankee Stadium a couple times. And 52,000 is basically 13,000 more than the biggest crowd you could have at Fenway. And it's huge.
Yeah.
Dodger Stadium is huge. And they also don't have almost no one uses public transit to get there. Almost everyone drives a car. You have to park at the stadium.
Yeah.
And it's $30 a pop. You talk about a team that is set up to make so much money. So say there's 10,000, 20,000 cars. They're all paying $30 a pop, and it goes straight to the team.
You know who it goes to? If I'm not mistaken, you know who got that? McCourt's ex-wife. She got the parking
and
the divorce.
I think people never really, I didn't really understand. It's funny you say that because I would have, like before going there, you told me that when they got divorced, I'd have been like, what the hell is that?
Yeah.
And the truth is, like if you do 30, I mean, you can do the math. If say, how many cars do you think, I mean, it was packed. How many cars do you think it is?
Oh, at least 15,000.
So we say 15,000. Times 30 is 450,000.
So you say they're making clear and guaranteed $300,000 a game. Guaranteed.
Guaranteed. And so we're talking millions and millions of dollars.
And you're talking about property that all you basically have to do is pay property taxes on.
Yeah, because
lots.
I'm sure they own the land by now. And so there's 52,000 people. The structure issue, we came up. They have escalators.
Yeah.
I mean, they have escalators to go up and down, not just stairs or whatever, which Fenway is nothing like that. And it was a cool environment. It's great. And everybody's got, and it's amazing, so different than when I was little. Everyone's got jerseys and hats. It was Lakers night, and so they had a bunch of Kobe stuff. But I would say to you, and it's the same feeling I have at Yankee Stadium, I didn't like it.
Really?
And it's because, first of all, it was intimidating. It's all get out. I mean, it's an intimidating place. It's too big.
Yeah.
And I feel the same way about Yankee Stadium. I think it's too big.
Now, is that just because you're used to being in a box when you go see games?
Or maybe
games?
I should flip it then. It shows me how great Fenway is. I guess that would be
also. Is it just more of a nostalgia thing to you?
No, because it's intimate. It's close. It's small. And it really is a difference. Like, I feel like I can yell from the same spot I was at this thing at Fenway, and the left fielder will hear me.
And that's strange because Dodger Stadium was built a long time ago.
But it's huge.
You would think it would have been more of a closer, you know, proximity baseball stadium.
And what they've done is that it still looks like it did in 65, but they just modernized the components. So, like, the weird shapes of, like, the billboards and the outfield,
yeah.
It still looks like Match Game or the dating game, you know what I mean? But that's totally modernized. But the key for me is they're doing all this crap about, like, get some B-list star on the Jumbotron to be like, let's make some noise, and nobody pays attention to it. They're constantly hammering home these announcements. Tons of loud music. Nobody's really cheering. And the game was a dog. The Braves beat them pretty soundly. But, like, they're doing all these prompts for cheering, and it almost never works.
Yeah.
The fans, I thought, were terrible. And I just didn't – I thought the experience was so different. Like, listen, even Fenway plays some music now, but, like, you really don't need to prompt the fans. They know what the hell's going on, and they're into the game. There, it's like nobody seemed to care. And I saw only one altercation. It was great. I got to tell you the story because I'm not a big TMZer, but, like, there was a guy who was on the – who was being talked to. Then I went to the bathroom. He was being talked to by, like, four or five cops or security. And by the time I got out of the bathroom, he was on his face on the ground. And they were all trying to, and he was still resisting. So they were moving it. And they must have separated both shoulders. They had his arms. And so people were all surrounding. There was, like, six or seven guys. And I watched the main part of the altercation before. I was like, maybe I should just film it. And so I started the filming going, and I was trying to be subtle. And it's a terrible film. And I started they were telling, move along. And I decided to go around the back of it and then continue to film it. And the security guy grabbed the phone out of my hand.
What?
And I said to the guy, I said, and I was like freaking out because internally. And I said to the, he's like, you got to go. You can't do that. And I said, listen, I'm sober and I'm a journalist. I'm pretty sure you can't do what you just did.
Yeah.
And he said, you got to, and I said, no, you can't. And so he gave me the phone back and he sort of pushed me along. But I was like, if that guy take, and like, I started to kind of argue with him a little bit. And I said, pretty soon my face is going to be on the ground.
Right.
And I was just happy that I got my freaking phone back. But I was like, I know First Amendment rights, but at the same time, like, this moron could have made my life really, really difficult.
That's weird that they would have done that. I wonder if it's because we're in the stadium.
Like, I don't know, but I felt
on a public street.
I felt that he's like, this is private property. I said,
yeah, that's a very fine line. I don't know.
But either way, I was like, what am I doing? Because, like, I'm not like a sensation. I wasn't going to post it on Facebook or anything. Like, that's not what I do. And so I did get to see some violence. But the third complaint I have is that 80% of the concessions were Dodger dogs. Like, everyone's like, a Dodger dog here. Like, there was like, it took us a 20-minute walk to get chicken fingers and fries.
Because everything's a Dodger dog.
Yeah, I was like, it's a stupid hot dog. There's nothing special about your stupid hot dog.
How much is a Dodger dog?
I didn't even look. I was so pissed.
It's got to be $8.
And listen, it was a beautiful night, even though it was like overcast and even a little drizzly. Like, being outside in LA at night is gorgeous, and I get it. But yeah, maybe it's nostalgia for Fenway, I don't know, but there's nostalgia for Dodger Stadium. And I had a good time. It's not like I had a miserable time, but I didn't like it. I didn't like the size of it. I didn't like the vibe of it. And the only good thing I'd say is they actually were able to get the wave going at some point.
Oh, God, I hate the wave.
I think it's hysterical.
Do you think they're actually, like, true, like, baseball fans, or it's just, like, people are just, like, out there on vacation, or just people are like, yeah, like, you know.
No, there's a lot of Latinos, and I think that, like, it's the one or two nights a year. Like, people have their babies.
Yeah.
There's someone breastfeeding, like, five rows over. Like, it's like a family thing.
Family
it reminds
thing.
Me when, from that standpoint, like, they weren't necessarily watching the game. But, like, it's a big deal to go.
Yeah.
And I remember when I was going to see Rico that one summer, excuse me, I went to see Rico like 8 times at Shea. And we used to sometimes get bored and we'd go up to the upper deck.
Yeah.
Where
the planes would hit you.
Well, basically it was like the Latin American community would be able to get seats to get in.
Yeah.
And they're up there singing and dancing and it was the most fun I've ever had at the ballpark in my life because they're just like having a blast. So from an enjoyment standpoint, people there to have fun. And I like that. But there wasn't really much of a focus on the game at all. Now, if the game was more closer and compelling, maybe it would have been different, but it didn't have the vibe. And Fenway gets it a little bit, too, now that it's so touristy. Like, you go to a random game in July, the person next to you is from Iowa. You know what I mean? It just sort of happens that way. So, in general, we had a really nice time, but from a baseball purist standpoint, outside of the fact that it's Dodger Stadium, I was like, I had $20 beers. I almost got my phone taken away. And I spent $250, you know, so...
I've never been to Dodger Stadium or San Francisco. I've been to all the other ones.
I really want to go to San Fran.
That's where I want to go to.
And you know what's weird? And maybe it's because one of my best friends from high school was a big Reds fan. I really want to go to Cincinnati.
I've been there. It's all right.
It's generic.
It's very generic.
The fans aren't awesome. No.
Yeah, it's all right. I mean, it's along the river. It's nothing. I mean,
nothing special.
Nah, it is what it is.
Any last words?
No, it's going to be real interesting to see how the Yankees can pull, if they can pull it off, and how it shapes up next week with the Red Sox. It's going to be interesting down the stretch for two teams that we thought were just kind of...
Yeah, well, I mean, the expectations were higher for the Yankees. Let's not be dishonest about it. But
will Cashman keep his job if the Yankees make the playoffs? That'll be the big question. Will they be able to keep his job?
Why, you think he's fired for sure if he doesn't?
I don't know. I just feel like...
I think they're both safe.
With all the talk about... looking at our analytics and all that, maybe that's him just saying we're going to find some patsies down in the numbers crunchers and blame them.
I don't
know.
I think if they were going to be fired, they would have fired them.
I don't know.
We'll see.
It's going to be interesting, though. Hopefully the kids can help us and pull it out.
We'll see. All right, this was episode 127 of Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports.